Concordia Publishing House's annual warehouse sale is both online and in-store. Take advantage of discounted prices on many of the items you hear promoted on Issues Etc. November 4th through 10th, and join us for a live broadcast from CPH on Thursday afternoon, November the 5th. Concordia Publishing House's warehouse sale online and in-store, cph.org, and 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis. Concordia Publishing House's warehouse sale, November 4th through 10th.
Nowhere in the scripture are we given this metaphor or doctrine. This is what Paul in the book of Colossians describes as a plausible sounding argument.
Whether we're more concerned about the adults than about the children, that's a huge question. And the West, the whole West, has decided that we care more about adults than we care about children.
Before we even made the move, why didn't we pause to ask, does it help them to take the word with them more accurately? Have we studied that? Mediacology does study that, and it says pretty clearly, no, it doesn't. It's not more effective.
Do you treat it as a common thing that you toss into the trash, into a plastic trash bag, and haul out to the streets? No.
That's just a taste of the four sound bites we have lined up to play for you in about an hour here on Issues Etc. When we play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week, we'll play those four sound bites, and then your phone calls, your emails, your tweets, and your visits and votes at our Facebook fan page will determine which one will be the Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week, live this Friday afternoon, October the 16th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. You have read stories before and thought, what's missing from this story? Something's missing here, not the facts so much as maybe explanation for some things. There was a recent story about Congressman Paul Ryan not altogether willing to run for Speaker of the House. He's a likely candidate, but he doesn't want to do it. He says he wants to spend some time with his family, not spend any less time with his family, certainly. Is there more to the story than that? And then, of course, a story recently about the producer of those undercover Planned Parenthood videos, David DeLayden. And that's a big story to tell. Could there be something missing from it as well? Joining us to talk about some religion ghosts in media coverage of Congressman Paul Ryan and David DeLayden, Terry Mattingly. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and he is founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here again.
All right, this term, religion ghost, that is often used in Get Religion circles. Can you define it for us and then give us an example, especially in the coverage of Paul Ryan and the speakership?
When we got started almost 11 years ago, the very first thing that was published on our website was an essay about religion ghosts. It's basically who we are and what we do. The key here is that we think that religion is a massive force in the daily lives of millions of people. And frequently, the press doesn't seem to realize when religion affects certain subjects. And we call these things ghosts. This is when you're dealing with a story that makes no sense whatsoever unless you examine the religious content of it, yet the press fails to do so. The Paul Ryan story is actually, to me, a very good example. In the sense that Paul Ryan, if you remember when he ran for president, vice president actually, there was quite a bit of examination of his Catholic faith as it related to social justice. He had a fixation on Ayn Rand at one point in his life. Economics, did his economics clash with the Catholic Church, et cetera. It was well known that this man was a very articulate, very active Catholic. And then you have all of these pictures of him, you know, this relatively young man for the Washington scene in his early to mid-40s, standing there with his wife and extremely photogenic family surrounding him. And, you know, his Catholicism was a part of the image. What I have found interesting about the current story about whether or not he will allow himself to be put forward to be Speaker of the House, which is not exactly a minor office in the city of Washington, D.C., we have all of this discussion, will he do it, won't he, will he not do it, why won't he do it, et cetera. And in the midst of that, the Washington Post wrote what I thought was a perfectly valid and very interesting feature. Paul Ryan was saying over and over, I'm not sure that at this point in life I want to spend even more time away from my family. My children are young. The speaker is on the road raising money, working for other candidates, massive amounts of time. I'm not sure that I want to be away from my family that much. And a lot of people that don't live in Washington or follow Washington politics very closely may not know that a lot of members of the House of Representatives don't move their families to Washington. On their salaries, they can't afford to as well as a senator might. I would argue that almost every senator, unless they're within driving or Amtrak range of the Capitol like Joe Biden was for so long, most of them have homes or condominiums or apartments in Washington, often quite large and beautiful ones. Washington becomes their home. The House of Representatives, however, is filled with people that have to run for office every 2 years. Their local constituency is critical, and most of them, if you know, they live in Washington all by themselves. Their families stay at home. So you have a lot of congressmen living, they're like five guys will rent a row house together, and each will have a room, or they'll have apartments. And they live primarily in D.C. for like 2 to 3, 4 days at most, linked to business. There have been a lot of fun stories about congressmen who literally live in their offices. They have hide-a-beds. They shower every day down at the gymnasium in the House of Rep offices, and they live out of their office as an apartment. It's a symbol of how frugal they are and how loyal they are to their district. Okay, now I give all of that background to say the fact that Ryan's family is elsewhere is actually a crucial detail of his life and of the lifestyle that he lives in the House of Reps. Now, my point is, the Washington Post wrote this interesting story where they said, isn't this really similar to the debates about whether women can have professional lives and have it all, and maybe that limits their ambitions? In other words, if anybody was writing this story about Ryan, wouldn't they say, if he was a woman, isn't this part of the whole can women have it all syndrome? I thought that was a very interesting story and, quite frankly, perfectly valid. What I thought was fascinating, though, is that at no point in that discussion did it bring up again the subject of his Catholic beliefs and the fact that he has, you know, a fairly large family for a politician, and the fact that his family matters to him a lot. It seemed like the family itself got lost. And if it's okay, which I think it is, to ask Paul Ryan if his Catholicism has to do with his economics, if it's okay, and I think it is, to ask him what it has to do with his view on, say, the death penalty or immigration or the war in Iraq, might it not also be appropriate to inquire of whether or not his views of marriage and family have something to do with his Catholicism? That's what we call a ghost.
Especially since it's not as though he's an unknown quantity. He was actually, if I'm not mistaken, somebody's running mate at one point in recent history.
That's what I said, yeah. Yeah, he's been in the, and he's had lots of valid questions about his faith asked. I thought this, though, was a very interesting subject to suddenly go faith neutral on. You know what I'm saying? Especially right in the middle of that little Vatican meeting that's going on right now on the family. And after that this guy, isn't his name like Pope Francis or something, just came through town talking family, 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 family. And now, you know, one of the most prominent Catholics in Washington, D.C., people are deciding whether or not he can be speaker. He says he can't do it because of his family, and nobody asked the religion question.
So I'm wondering, if that were pursued, would you also want to have at least a sidebar in such a story? On kind of what you call in your piece, Roman Catholic workaholics in the Beltway.
That's a great question. You know, in fact, that's really an interesting subject in and of itself. I'm not sure that's what you do. You don't let that subject take over the Ryan profile, but I think that's a great story for another day. In other words, if you're in a faith, how about Mormons? How about Mormons in the House of Reps or the Senate? Whereas here you are, you're a part of a church that its emphasis on family life and even large families is a major piece of its public image and of its theology that is known by the public. How do you reconcile this with your life? I mean, how do you pull this off? That, to me, would be a great story. Yeah, in and of itself.
Another subject here wherein you found a ghost or detected a ghost has to do with David DeLeiden, this young Catholic activist who is probably best known not by his face or his name, but by the many, many Planned Parenthood undercover videos. Talk about that, if you would.
Well, once again, we have a man who is very much in the public eye right now. What he's done is very controversial. The Planned Parenthood expose videos have they've received a lot of attention, although I would argue in the mainstream press they didn't receive as much attention as they perhaps should have. But anyway, he's very much a public figure. He's very controversial. And the details of his own life are kind of intriguing. I've been waiting for major profiles of this guy. He's been on talk television a lot. It's like the subject he's dealing with is opinion, not fact, to a lot of the media. Finally, we get a large Washington Post piece about this man. One of our prominent newspapers gets an interview with him, and it's Meet the Millennial Behind the Videos. And the word meet, to me, was crucial, because that, to me, basically says our goal in this story is to allow the public to find out what makes this man tick. Why is he doing what he's doing? He is a Catholic. The degree to which his Catholicism affects his life, you can find out about that in a lot of religious media, but it hasn't been a big part of what he's done in the mainstream press, once again, because I would say people haven't been asking the question. The fact that they didn't talk a lot about the fact that he was a Catholic, other than just like one brief mention in a reference that I noted, the reference to his Catholicism was shorter than the reference to either his hybrid car or his funny socks. And I think it probably has more to do with his work than either of those things. I was intrigued by the fact that this man frequently, it's a standard part of how he explains his life and work, is that he himself, as a newborn, as an infant, as a child, as an unborn child, he is the product of a crisis pregnancy. Now, the degree to which he talks about that openly, in terms of the details with his parents, frankly, I haven't found the story told at length. Surely somebody has asked him about it. And why wouldn't you ask him about it? If this man is saying, I myself as a human being was the product of a crisis pregnancy, and that is why I became obsessed with abortion and with other people in crisis pregnancies and in unborn children, etc., doesn't that strike you as a fairly large religious subject to loom over a story and be mentioned in like three words, you know, and not inquire about it?
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about religion ghosts in the story of David DeLeiden. When we come back, we'll find out why the story was framed in terms of political activism. Stay tuned.
In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
LutheranReformation.org is the brand new one-stop shop for all things Reformation. It's your source for news, events, history, videos, activities, educational resources, and much, much more. New resources will be added regularly, each one designed to help you celebrate and remember the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. Because Reformation 2017 is still all about Jesus. Visit LutheranReformation.org today. LutheranReformation.org.
Do you have a hard time finding Christian greeting cards and gifts that aren't either sappy or theologically suspect? Ad Crucem offers the perfect combination of art and the truth of the scriptures with beautiful and reverent greeting cards and gifts. Deliver the true comfort of the gospel, Christ crucified for sinners, to family and friends with Ad Crucem. ADCRUCEM.com. Confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. on this Friday afternoon, October the 16th. We're talking about some religion ghosts. Right now, this religion ghost found in the media coverage of the producer of the undercover Planned Parenthood videos, David DeLeiden. Terry Mattingly is our guest, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, you say that the David DeLeiden story was framed in terms of political activism. Why is it important to take note of that particular framework the media likes to use?
We've talked about this a lot. Politics is the ultimate reality to a lot of the press. And I want to stress that the degree to which he is linked to political groups or funded by political groups or whatever, that is certainly a valid area for investigation. If someone wanted to write a story how this man raised his money, I would think that's a perfectly acceptable story to pursue. If they wanted to write a story saying, David, I can't pronounce his last name, David's links to the anti-abortion movement, that would be a perfectly valid story. What struck me about this one is that this story put itself out there as a meet this man and let's find out what makes him tick. And then you ignore his faith and you ignore his own personal story of his own existence in a crisis pregnancy. You can put other things in the story, but in my personal opinion, you better include that. Now, here's the thing that really makes me, curious. When he told his story to the Washington Post reporter, who, by the way, is not one of their excellent religion reporters, it's someone from the social change desk. In other words, this is a social issue story or a political story, in other words. Did he describe his faith? Did he describe his own existence from a crisis pregnancy situation? How much did he talk about it and then they left it out? Or did they just simply not even ask him? And, of course, as consumers of the news, we have no way of knowing which of those happened, if either. It just strikes me as a ghost.
You ask rhetorically, is DeLeiden the wrong kind of Catholic? What is that question?
Well, he's a conservative Catholic. He's a traditional Catholic. In most of the newsrooms that I've been around, including the ones of which I've worked in, there are quite a few ex-Catholics. There are quite a few progressive Catholics. There are very few daily mass, go to confession several times a year Catholics. I think right now that in the Pope Francis era, a lot of Catholics related to news are kind of feeling their oats, you know, when it comes to the Pope, and justifiably so, go for it. It would help if you quoted what the man wrote and said in his other sermons instead of a couple of sound bites, but I think people have a right to be excited about Pope Francis. What I'm saying is, though, I'm not sure that someone whose cause is as questionable, if not, I'll use the word, hated in most newsrooms as someone who's taking on Planned Parenthood, I'm not sure they want to say he's doing it because of his Catholic faith. Because what he's doing is pretty wild stuff from their perspective and from a lot of people's perspective. Saying that he's a Catholic and having him explain what his Catholic faith has to do with his work, I think that may make it sound too mainstream.
That's interesting. So you're suggesting, or at least kind of toying with the idea, that because the newsroom in general will disagree with his methods and his goals, they don't want him Catholic, assigning him a Catholic identity in the story or emphasizing it might make him a sympathetic character.
Yes, that's part of what I'm saying. I would say that if they were profiling right now people who were working with migrant workers in California and taking part in immigration reform and stuff there, and you had Catholic activists who were working on that, and they were holding masses in the fields for migrant workers, et cetera, I think people would be much more comfortable describing all of that in terms of an application of Catholic social doctrine, which, by the way, it is, and I'm not disputing that at all. I think they'd be more likely to do that than in the profile of a man whose causes is controversial and who is taking on an institution that is all but sacred, you know, in a lot of newsrooms, which would be Planned Parenthood and the sexual revolution in general. To give you another case, I mean, let's say anti-nuclear activists. You know, there are, you know, nuns trying to paint slogans or throw blood on nuclear facilities and stuff. And in most stories about that kind of work, people are pretty careful to explain that this is a part of their Catholic faith. You know, they believe this, this, and this. You might even get a Pope quote in there or something like that. The key is this is normal. This is Catholic. What these people are doing is not all that weird. It's not all that strange. And I agree. My question is, why does it seem to be an area that isn't explored in this guy's case? Just asking.
Finally, Terry, should the Dalyden story have been assigned to the religion desk?
This would have been a great chance to have a teamwork situation. I definitely think I was surprised the Post got an interview with him. I think he would have a lot of reasons to mistrust the mainstream press at this point. I would have loved to have seen a religion writer involved in the reporting of that story, yes. Assigning it to the religion desk? That might be making religion too big a part of the story. In other words, unless you were going to say this is a story of his crisis pregnancy, which led to his birth, this is the story of his religious faith. So please, let's be clear here. I'm not saying that religion is the only angle of this story. I'm not. I think there's a lot of valid angles. I am saying that if the story's goal is to say, this is why this man does what he does, it would be nice to have some quotes where he gets to explain why he does what he does. And I suspect that Catholicism and his own interesting history related to pregnancy would come up, don't you?
One more question there with about a minute here, Terry. I can picture a lead that would be somehow encapsulate the quote about being a crisis pregnancy himself. Would that be going too far?
I would have been tempted to go with that lead. It's as good an explanation for the risks he has taken and the fervor with which he has worked. It would seem to me that this cause is highly personal to him. And if that's where he starts his story, I think that wouldn't be a bad place to start a story about his motivations, his worldview, and his life.
In what you've heard from Dalyden himself in the various few interviews that he's granted, read here in the Post story, would he think of what he's doing, in your estimation, would he conceive of what he's doing has done as political activism?
Obviously, anyone who is trying to provide materials that can be used to help defund Planned Parenthood, that has to be viewed as a political act. And I'm not saying that it isn't. I'm talking about his own personal motivations to get involved in such a highly political subject. Often faith pulls you into the public square. Would Martin Luther King Jr. have said that his work was merely political? I don't think so. Would Mother Teresa say that her work was primarily political? I don't think so. How about the Dalai Lama? How about Gandhi? I'm naming people who were clearly involved in politics. But if you're going to tell their story, don't you have to put the faith element in there?
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the Weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thank you for your time.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, This Week in Pop American Christianity with Chris Roseborough of Fighting for the Faith.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.